FNR, Football Nation Radio. Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone, you're on FNR Football Nation Radio, live across Australia, Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego and this is Calcio Cafe, the only breakfast show dedicated to football across this beautiful land in Australia. We are your voice of football, so join in the conversation anytime on our live shows today and you can win big time. Today on our show and many other live shows here on FNR, we are giving away our best caller or SMS a traditional premium packed panettone from our great friends there at Ital. Just give us a call on 9944 9999. That's 9944 9999. 03 in front of that if you're outside Victoria, plus 613 if you're overseas. You can also SMS us on 0428 933 45, 0428 933 45, for any thoughts and comments. The best caller and SMSer will get panettone on all our live shows today, so join in the conversation anytime. Coming up in this hour, we cover the winners and losers in round 10 of the A-League. Louise Taffer gives us a little bit of Taffer time with her W-League wrap. We go to a club corner with Coburg City FC in Melbourne, speaking to their vice president, Dominic Montesanto. And FNR EPL expert Warren Diego joins us for his EPL wrap. So let's get into it. It's a big, big show.
Winners and losers.
Yes, so round 10 of the A-League kicked off on Friday night when Melbourne Victory hosted Adelaide United in the derby with no name. It had been 11 long years since United had won in Melbourne, and showing some guts and determination, it took nine Crow Eaters to do the business.
Was favoured to take it pre-season. Kiddo's delivery, free header! Barisha, great movement into the pocket. Williams spotted him. Now Negro around the corner for George, who timed his run, got rid of his IS too. All the way through to Mark Milligan. Flicks it up for himself. Oh, what a goal! Mark Milligan! What about the skill level there? It's a captain's goal and the equaliser from the former skipper. They do pick it up in midfield and Isaias plays a nice ball wide. Usnich, beautiful move, opens up some space. Blackwood! They're back in front, the Reds! And it's a rare goal!
Yes, with thanks to Fox Sports, that was Adelaide United away win 2-1 against Melbourne Victory on Friday night. Goals there by Diawara in the 17th minute for Adelaide. Equaliser, cracking goal by Mark Milligan in the 56th. But George Blackwood, a guy who's got a lot of potential, doesn't score enough goals though, did get the winner in the 72nd minute. Adelaide went down to nine men for the last 10 minutes of the game, but Victory could not penetrate. In the aftermatch press conference, Victory coach Kevin Muscat said he wasn't panicking over anything, but the lack of concentration is killing the team.
It's just, a couple of moments of, lapse of concentration because, again, we give ourselves a mount in the climb, a bit of lapse of concentration. Someone's 6-7 yards out on a set piece, with a free header. So that's nothing else but, concentration. And we have an opportunity, obviously, to score from the penalty spot. And we don't. And then, when it seems like we've got all the ascendancy in the game, we're, making all the attack, making all the play, getting forward, creating chances, we get a deserved goal and a very good goal. And then again, just a lapse of concentration. We fall into a false sense of security because we get the equaliser. And, just the understanding of, what got us the equaliser, we don't, maintain. We're not as aggressive. The ball, we're allowing crosses to come in and they've got, a body in the box and no one's marking him. So again, just a lapse of concentration and, give yourself another mountain to climb.
That's Kevin Muscat, coach of Melbourne Victory, after the game. Again, bemoaning the fact that his team just keeps on giving away cheap goals when he says they're dominant in the game, but they haven't been all that dominant on the scoreboard or in the results category on the ladder this season, and they'll need to pick up very, very quickly. I think they're 15 points behind Sydney FC, and they regard themselves as a top two team. They've got a mountain to climb, really, to catch Sydney FC by the end of the season. For Adelaide United coach Marco Kurz, the win was all about love, the love he has for his boys.
It was a very big victory for us, and first I must say congratulations for the boys. I love the boys, I love the squad. I think it is not easy to win in Melbourne victory, but today we make the good job. The boys fight for the result, and yeah, now we are happy with the 3 points.
Yes, that was Marco Kurz, the coach of Adelaide United. Famous victory there by Adelaide United away from home in Melbourne. Like I said, 11 long years in the making, but against with only 9 men at the end, there was a gutsy performance there by Adelaide, and something that Melbourne victory will rue, I think, by the end of the season. On Saturday, Arvo, the round continued in Brisbane with the Roar hosting the hapless Wellington Phoenix. It's been a stuttering season for the Roar and a massively disappointing campaign for the Kiwis. So I guess a nil-all draw was no surprise. After the game, the Raw coach, John Aloisi, well, he only wanted to talk about the positives.
But we knew it was going to be a difficult one. You know, Daniel Bowles has come back from a long-term injury. You're going to be up 1 week, down the next week. That's what happens when you come back from a long-term one. And, you know, then we're asking a lot again of our young boys. But to be fair, we probably deserve to win it when you look at the big chances. But positive, 2 clean sheets in a row. So that's a big one for us. You know, we're going through a difficult stage with the players that we've got out there. We've got a lot of injuries, and we have to, you know, grind through this period and make sure that we keep picking up points.
That was coach of the Brisbane Roar, John Aloisi, after his nil-all draw against Wellington Phoenix. The Phoenix coach, Daria Kalecic, after conceding goals for fun in the previous weeks, it was nice to get a clean sheet, and that's all he wanted.
I think if the team play first time in couple months, keep for the first time in couple months clean sheet, then that makes me really satisfied. I'm a coach who likes good and solid organization. We struggle a lot because of many reasons to create that till now. And after all that games, days, weeks and months, we realized today, we played today 0-0. Actually, this game we should also to win, to be honest. I think we deserve to win. But what is in my mind is only that happiness about clean sheet and that we play solid game from the first till the last minute.
There's Wellington Phoenix coach Daria Kalecic after the game. They're very, very happy just to have a clean sheet after what they've had to go through this season so far. Ahead by 2 and 3 goals in some games and conceding and losing those games or drawing those games. He's had to sort things out, and he's very, very happy with a clean sheet after the Brisbane Roar game on the weekend. On Saturday night, the biggest game on the Australian football calendar, the Sydney Derby between Western Sydney Wanderers and Sydney FC, was played and won, and it was a demolition of epic proportions.
Here's Carney. Bonaventure got level with him. Palmed away by Jedinčević. And Mirzajevski drills it in. And Sydney FC had the derby advantage in the 14th minute. Bobo. It's lovely stuff. It's Brosk. It's 2. Gorgeous goal by Sydney FC. They were patient. They probed. And eventually they were clinical. It's going to be Mirzajevski. Oh, it's 3! And the derby might be won before half-time. A double for the pole. Sydney FC in heaven. Four, of course, is the biggest margin of victory in a Sydney derby. Corner taken quickly and short. Mirzajevski then whips it in. Oh, he's got it on goal! McLaughlin Scott and Sydney FC do have 4. Brandon O'Neill still full of running. Brandon O'Neill trying to place it. Wonderful. A
miss and an embarrassment there for Western Sydney Wanderers, their biggest loss in the derby in their history. 5-0 losers there against Sydney FC. Mijewski scored in the 14th and the 45th minute. Bross scored in the 41st. Lachlan Scott, own goal in the 53rd. And Brandon O'Neill scored in the 76th minute. After the game, Sydney FC coach Graham Arnold just bemoaned the fact. He's a bit greedy, by the way. He wanted more goals. And he was very, very upset that they didn't get more goals.
I could see it in the faces. I could see it in the eyes of the boys this week. You know, we weren't happy with our performance against Adelaide. And as I said, you know, we worked very hard on, you know, every aspect of the game, and, you know, getting the right messages into the subconscious mind and the brain, and making sure that we teach them how to win. And there's a lot of belief in that group. There's a lot of belief in what we do as a team and as a group. And you know, at the end of the day, the one negative is we should have scored another five.
Another 5 goals Graham Arnold wanted. He wanted to make it 10-0 against Western Sydney Wanderers. Well, they didn't manage that, but it was a big enough win anyway. 5-0 against the Wanderers in the Sydney Derby. In the Wanderers camp, Josip Gombauer implored the media to leave his players alone because he's fully responsible.
What they say that go wrong sounds crazy, but it's what they say to the players now, and it's what I am honest and I need to say, you know. For me, the players are trying to do what the coach is asking that they do. I assume all the responsibility of this big loss, that is a loss that I assume that is a big one, and I want to send my apologies to all the fans that this night come to support our team. But for me, the team, I am watching things that are improvements in the way that we want to play. Today it sounds like this man, what is he saying, no? But they are trying to do and to play the football that I am asking to play. And I say to the players, I can say anything to any player. They just are following instructions, and I assume the responsibility.
Josip Gombauer imploring the media to leave his players alone. He is fully responsible. It's a process for him, but he's a man under pressure. I don't think Western Sydney Wanderers, their fans and their owners and the people who manage the club will be as patient as maybe the Adelaide United people were after not winning in the first 9 games when he first took over Adelaide. First 4 games, no wins and very few goals, and a couple of crazy selection moves on the weekend before the game. A lot of people questioning that, so he is a man under pressure at the moment. Later on Saturday, Perth Glory hosted the visiting Newcastle Jets in the comfort of their own home. The only problem was the result was a little bit uncomfortable.
Jets have had 23 more shots and scored 10 more goals than the Glory so far, as Mills whips this one in, and there's Mills scoring for the Glory. Joe Knowles, hope it's his account, in the Hyundai A-League scoring his first career goal, and it was a beauty. This moment to the Glory defence. Ball sent in, O'Donovan flicked it on, it's teed up here, it's put into the bottom corner. Katrumbis has equalised for Newcastle. A great finish. Travos to send the corner in. Decent ball flicked on. The Glory as the Jets get 2 in the blink of an eye, but Newcastle have gone bang bang as we see it going through, and Jeremy Walker with the own goal.
Yes, with thanks to Fox Sports, that was the goals between Newcastle Jets and Perth Glory. 2-1 away win there by Newcastle Jets. The goal scorers were Knowles in the 20th minute for Perth Glory, and Katrumbis in the 88th minute, and an own goal by Jeremy Walker in the 92nd minute, right at the death. It was a late show by Newcastle Jets, and just shows they have got the pedigree and the credentials maybe to push the Sydney FC this year and any other teams that are up near the top there because they are winning away from home now and doing it in fine style late in the game. They called it, I think, a theft. I think Gurney Merrick described it as a bit of a smash and grab theft, getting the points so late against Perth Glory. But they'll take the 3 points and go home and dust themselves off and prepare themselves for the next game. Of course, on Sunday night, we had Melbourne City currently undergoing a cultural reconstruction, hosted Mariners at Amy Park in Melbourne. And it was a City who outlasted the boys from Central Coast with a very, very special goal.
Pisanis has had a very quiet evening so far. It's a lovely release. Here's Bratton to the space opening up. Puts it into the path of McCormack! First goal from open play for Ross McCormack. The deadlock is broken just before the hour mark. And it's the Scotsman with his seventh goal of the season.
Yes, with only one goal that separated the two teams there. Melbourne City, of course, through Ross McCormack, scored in the 59th minute. Central Coast had their chances late in the game, but in truth, I think Melbourne City had so many chances in the first half that she really should have put it to bed. And that was a message from Warren Joyce in the after-match press conference.
I thought the first half, I thought it was as good as we played, and I think you should be, well, three great chances and other good opportunities. Then at half-time, at 3-0, it's a different, completely different game. You know, I think credit to their coach and their players. They've got some good players. They can handle the ball. They try and pass it around. They ask you questions. They give you problems. Second half, we had to deal with them problems a little bit but then score a good goal. So, all in all, it was a testing game against a side that's in form. And I thought we equipped ourselves well and deserved the points, deserved the 3 points. Maybe could have made it easier for ourselves if we, you know, take the chances in the first half.
That's Melbourne City coach Warren Joyce, of course. Happy after these teams' 1-0 win over Central Coast Mariners. It's been a turbulent week for Melbourne City and they've come through with 3 points there. It's amazing how problems are forgotten with a win on the weekend. The boys worked very, very hard and probably should have scored more goals. For Mariners coach Paul Ocon, he just wanted to know what a VAR howler was.
I don't know, because my take on it is... They say the VAR will only overrule if it's an obvious error. But it is an obvious error because the referee doesn't see it. So it's an obvious error from the referee. So VAR, you have the technology. Penalty or not penalty? It's an obvious error because the referee doesn't see it. But the VAR has the... So it's such a grey area. It just doesn't make sense. What's a howler? Tell me what a howler is. What's a howler? They need to explain what's a howler. An obvious error for me is when the referee doesn't see the incident. Or at that moment he thinks it's not a penalty, but if you're in upstairs and you see it as a penalty, then it's a penalty. It shouldn't be, penalty, it could be a penalty, but no, because it's not an obvious... You know, I'm not having a whinge. This happened every week now, and I bet you there's another 9 A-League coaches that will be sitting here probably will want to say the same thing. It just doesn't make sense.
That's Central Coast Mariners coach Paul Ocon, and I agree wholeheartedly. Please define what a howler was, define what a clanger is, just define how you're going to use this VAR, because I believe there was a clear penalty to Central Coast Mariners. Even though Melbourne City deserved the win, don't get me wrong, but I felt there was a clear penalty and the referee missed it. And why didn't VAR step in on that one? So in that respect, I hope we get this thing right. That's winners and losers for this round 10 on Calcio Cafe. Of course, all our audio there was brought to you by Fox Sports, and thanks to those guys there at Fox Sports for their support of FNR since we've started 8 weeks ago. Next up after the break, we're going to Club Corner and speaking to Dominic Montesanto, the Vice President of Coburg City FC. Of course, we've got Warren's EPL wrap coming up and Louise with a little bit of tougher time giving her W League wrap later on the show. So stick around. This is Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR. Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football live across Australia. This is FNR Football Nation Radio, Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Coming up on Calcio Cafe, we're speaking to Warren Diego with his EPL wrap on the weekend. Of course, Louise Taffer joins us with her Taffer Time, which is obviously on a Monday morning with her W League wrap. But first, let's go to our club corner as we do every day, Monday to Fridays here on FNR Football Nation Radio, Calcio Cafe. And today we're travelling to Coburg City Football Club to speak to their vice president, Dominic Montesanto, on the line. Good morning to you, Dominic.
Good morning, Carl.
Yes, really good to have you on the line, mate, and thanks for joining us today. You are, of course, vice president of the Coburg City FC. Tell us a little bit about the club, how many players, how many teams you have, and what competition you play in.
Yes, well, Coburg City was formed back in 2014, Dallas. Basically, after the NPL structure came in, we were originally affiliated with the Moreland Zebras and still are affiliated with them. But we sort of came down with the issue where we had an influx of players where they weren't sort of at the NPL level to sort of compete and play at. And we didn't want to sort of let these players go. So we created Coburg City. Basically, back then, we basically only had an under 12 and an under 13 team and our men's metropolitan team. So we wanted to keep these guys at the club. And over the last 4 years, the club has grown significantly. And we're proud to say that this year we actually have the biggest number of juniors in our club's short history. We're filling a team in each of our age groups, and under 12s, 13s, 14s, 15s, 16s, and also our small-sided program, which will have three under eight small-sided teams next year as well, which we're really happy about and really proud of how far the club has come over the short history.
Dominic, I'm really intrigued about how the game is absolutely exploding at that level. You talk about only having two teams and it's grown into all these other teams and all these other players, and it's just going to get bigger and bigger by the sounds of things. What's happening at that level? Because certainly the game's not being marketed at the top level that well. What's happening at that grassroots level to make so many kids wanting to play the game these days?
Look, I think it really comes down to the success of our national senior team, the Socceroos, basically, and then also our women's team, because success there and kids seeing players sort of that have come through the ranks through junior clubs in the major cities of Melbourne, of Australia, basically, and sort of can see that, well, these guys are sort of like us, you know, they've grown up loving soccer as a child, playing it, and look how far they've gotten, and that has contributed to the success. And I think the success of our A-League as well has really pushed that. And like you said, the popularity wise, we have the biggest numbers of interest this year with all of our junior teams. And for the first time in our club's history, we've actually had to have trials because we've got such a big number of kids wanting to play for us. So that's really good. And I think it does. It comes down to the success of our A-League, seeing how players are playing in the state leagues and the NPLs, that getting a debut in the A-League and getting that exposure on TV, which is really good. And I think that's contributed to the success a lot. So,
with so many kids wanting to play the game and so many parents wanting to bring their kids down to your club, that also offers a lot of challenges too. What sort of challenges does Coburg City FC face?
Look, the biggest challenge that we've got at the moment is ground availability, unfortunately. With we actually co-tenant with the Moreland Zebras, and like I said earlier, we are a sister club with the Moreland Zebras, and we're happy to be under their wing and get a lot of guidance from those guys, which is really, really good. But, yeah, it really comes down to the availability of grounds, which is unfortunate because with so many players and so many teams, each year it just gets bigger and bigger, and the ground situation is probably our biggest concern at the moment. And I don't think the councils may have been prepared for such a big explosion in the sport. And with us in the city of Moreland, there's a large number of teams in that area. There's basically three or four NPL teams within that municipality. So they're just the NPLs, and then the community teams in that are just amazing how many numbers of community teams there are in that area. So that would be our biggest concern, I guess. And unfortunately, we're sort of capped with how many sort of teams we can have at the club due to that individual factor.
So, Dominic, obviously, when you've got a vibrant club, it's almost like a community hub in the area. Parents coming and going, kids enjoying themselves there. What impact do you think your club has on the local community?
With the local community, like we said, we don't just remote. We take any players that sort of come through our door and always, yeah, try and keep that community sense vibrant with our club. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we've got. And we don't discriminate. We accept all races and religions at our club. We thrive on that. The multicultural aspect of our clubs is something that we're very proud of. So,
mate, I'm going to give you a little bit of a challenge now. I want you to put your crystal ball, look into your crystal ball and tell us what the club's going to look like in 10 years' time.
Look, in 10 years, our affiliation with the Moreland Zebras has become a lot stronger over the last 4 years. In talks with the Football Federation as well. It looks like that will only become a lot more stronger over the next 10 years. And we're hoping to have a team in each of our age groups looking down the track. And then possibly the addition of girls' teams as well, which is another aspect of the sport which is absolutely exploding at the moment as well. So, in 10 years' time, we hope to have one of these sort of biggest clubs in the northern suburbs, hopefully.
And hopefully you'll have a very proactive council or provide the grounds for you too.
Yes,
one last definitely. One before we go, Dominic, a success story. Tell us what a success story at your club looks like. And it doesn't mean a player that's gone on to play for the Socceroos or Matildas. It could be something else. What are you really proud of that you've achieved with at least one story?
Well, what I'm really proud of is, like I said earlier, a lot of the players that, that play at community level either aren't at the level yet to play NPL or play the highest level. And I'm proud to say over the last 3 years, we've had probably five or six players that have started off in the community level, have worked really hard and have made it to an NPL club eventually, which is really inspiring. And we really like promoting that and showing that our kids and saying, well, hey, you're at a community club, but that doesn't mean that you can't make it. It's if you put in a lot of hard work, which these players have, you'll definitely reap the rewards if you put in the effort. And that's what we try and push at our club. We get the best coaches that we can source and really drum the disciplines and the basics of football into these players. And that's probably one of our success stories and something that we're very, very proud of. So.
Good on you, Dominic. I know that the Moreland area in Melbourne here is a thriving area of football. I know the Moreland Council do their best they can.
Yes, they
but
do.
We hope that politically we can get one up on the other sports, because we do have the numbers. We do have the participation. 3.1 million people play are actively involved in the game across the country all year round, plus 1.96 million people play the game. So we should have the political influences there to get more grounds and more infrastructure. But thanks for joining us today. Fantastic work there at Coburg City, and pass on our best to everyone involved at the club, because I think from what we hear, it's running really, really well. It's just a thriving club.
It is. Thank you very much.
Good on you, mate. That is Dominic Montesanto, Vice President of Coburg City FC, on Club Corner this morning. Let's take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, we'll speak to Warren with his EPL wrap on the weekend.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, it is a radio revolution, streaming football 24/7. It is FNR Football Nation Radio and Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Let's have a chat about English football now. And we go to our expert, our FNR EPL expert, Warren Diego, joins us on the line to give us his EPL wrap. Good morning to you, Warren.
Carlos, were you talking about FNR, or you were talking about my segment when you said it was a radio revolution, or is that both?
Look, I need to pump you up right there because you're on air. I need to sell you as much as possible.
Okay.
You are a radio revolution, not even your segment. Warren Diego is a radio revolution.
Now, Warren, that's comforting.
Where do I start? You know, do I go and talk about my beloved West Ham with their beautiful 1-0 win over Chelsea? I'm not sure if it was beautiful, but it was a great 1-0 win over Chelsea. And David Moyes reckons they should have scored more. Or do we go to Manchester United's home loss against Manchester City in the Manchester Derby this morning, 2-1 loss? Where do you want to start?
Well, I think we'll start with West Ham, Carlos. We'll give you a bit of indulgence. Look, Chelsea have been ultimately a little bit inconsistent, particularly coming off European competition. And really, I think Carlos, if we have a look across the Premier League this week, we'd probably say all the teams that played in the Champions League, maybe except for Tottenham, who have themselves been coming off a winless streak of about five games. They weren't fantastic, and Chelsea weren't. West Ham, to their credit, though, I think teams are getting pragmatic, particularly David Moyes, who needed to get a result. It was a good result for West Ham, but it's not so much the individual performance for West Ham. It's more the consistency around putting a number of performances together. He's been in charge for three games now, his first win. Hopefully this builds some momentum, because one thing we know about David Moyes, he can put a team together and make them hard to beat. So West Ham, a good result. Really, I think the way all the results panned out on the weekend, with Manchester City being the only team in the top five other than Tottenham to win, really means that we're going to focus on who's going to finish second, third and fourth for the Champions League. Well, that's the way it seems to me.
So you're calling it now Manchester City by a street, so now that they've beaten Man U at home. It's before Christmas, so Warren, are you going to take that risk right now?
Yeah, I think I am, Carlos. They passed the first Snoogs test in terms of the cold conditions on the weekend. It was snowing and sleeting at Anfield, and it was cold. Actually, this shows you the quality of my life, Carlos. I was watching Liverpool play Manchester under-18s on Liverpool FC TV on Saturday night. And the days where they got the orange ball out and the only thing that was without snow were just the lines?
Yeah.
Well, that was what it was like in Manchester. So
it was amazing, Warren, because I saw a vision of, I can't remember the player. It was a foreigner sitting on the bench, warming up. He was in the sleeping bag, right? And he had a hot water bottle up against his face. And I'm telling you the truth. I do not lie. I saw this. I'm thinking, if that guy's playing for Man City, there's no way. I don't care how far ahead they are right now. If he's playing for Man City, there's no way that they will win the league this year. But I mean, what's happened to the undersoil heating? I haven't seen that. Remember they had the undersoil heating?
Yes.
Surely they would have switched that on. I haven't seen snow on the ground like that for a long time.
No, it's quite amazing. And it was really interesting. I think it was a tad cold, but I was thinking that the undersoil heating would be turned up to maximum, Carlos,
yeah,
and that you'd be getting rid of the snow. Look, that game didn't reach any great heights, to be honest with you, and a lot of these games haven't reached great heights. Look, Man City have just got a lot more class, and when Pogba wasn't able to play because of the suspension, I really think it probably meant that Manchester United were always going to struggle. They do struggle for creativity, and they just don't have the class, I think, to go with Man City. And to credit Man City, the goal came from an unusual source in Otamendi. It was sort of not a precise goal, more sort of something that just came out of, ricocheted ball in the 6-yard box. So they'd be really happy, I think, to just get that type of result and move on. I think Man United are probably still a year away in terms of quality that they need. And Pogba's such an important player. I think the stats without him playing in terms of the number of goals they score against when he is playing is quite amazing. So they were always going to struggle when he was not playing. I don't think in Manchester United need to worry too much. I think they're right in the hunt, particularly with the likes of Arsenal and Liverpool, who just when you think they're building momentum, find ways to give points away, as both of them did. Although in Arsenal's case, they did come from 1-0 down against Southampton with Giroud scoring in the 88th. But the Liverpool example was typical of everything that you love and hate about Liverpool.
Absolutely. The 1-1 draw there against Everton. Wayne Rooney is in a rich vein. I know it was a penalty, but he's in a rich vein in the last couple of weeks. Sam Allardyce has really twigged something in him. And Everton are going to be hard to beat. Everton could well, under Sam Allardyce, with the squad they have, now, focused on the positives rather than negatives, they could be a team that could actually, maybe push for Europa type positions if they keep on going the way they are under him.
Well, I tell you one thing, Carlos, with so many poor teams, with so many average teams, I think if you have a look at Leicester City, they've won three in a row and they're suddenly just sitting outside the Europa spot. So that's where it goes. Look, I think Sam laid it out last week, didn't he? He basically said, I don't care what people think about the way we play. We're going to play a certain way based on who we're playing and looking to get results. And he's come in, they've had two wins and a draw. It wasn't a penalty today, yesterday, or in 2 weeks, in 2 years' time. But if you give the referee an opportunity to make a decision by being clumsy, and look, Lovren, I think, is a quality defender, but God, he makes some stupid decisions, Carlos, and that was just a stupid decision, and that's just going to heap more pressure on him as Liverpool get into the January transfer window. But I want to instigate what they call a goal bank, Carlos. Rather than beating teams 7-0 and 5-1, I would have just hoped that Liverpool could have put a couple of goals in the bank and just called on that second one, because they only needed that second one. And if Mane had decided not to shoot and square the ball, it would have been two goals to Salah and 2-0, and the game would have been all over. And Liverpool only were giving Everton a chance to shoot them in the foot by not scoring that second goal based on the amount of possession they had and how well they played in general.
Well, it was a Merseyside derby, so it was always going to be tight, and Everton were never going to lie down, irrespective of who was coaching them, and probably was even more emphasised with Sam Allardyce in charge there. Tottenham back on in the winning ways in a big, big way against Stoke. I know it was home, but 5-1 against Stoke. Harry Kane on the score sheet again. Christian Eriksen, Son scored. I think there was an own goal in there too. A little bit of swashbuckling Tottenham stuff again.
Back to Harry Kane scoring, Carlos, which is really the common denominator for Tottenham in many ways. I think the story about this is Stoke. Surely Mark Hughes has got to be the next guy on the chopping block. I would have thought almost certainly. Stoke lack identity. They concede multiple numbers of goals. They're not fantastic at home. In fact, I can't think of one thing going for them, except for, you know, reinstituting Peter Crouch as their number one striker at the age of 37. So I think the story's more about Stoke. If Tottenham hadn't gone through this little period where they haven't been able to win games, you would have not been surprised with the way that they played against Stoke. So I think Tottenham, they're in the mix in terms of those automatic Champions League spots, no question. And it'll just be whether they can manage. I think they've got to go out and get a striker myself to support Harry Kane. Although when Eriksen and Kane play well, and they haven't played so well recently, they are a very hard team to beat, no matter who they're playing or where they're playing.
In the game of the two great improvers this season, teams that don't have a lot of resource, but they maximise what they've got. Burnley versus Watford. For me, if I was in England this weekend, I would have gone to see this game because I reckon it would have been cut and thrust. I didn't get to see it on TV, but it was a 1-0 win in the end by Burnley.
Yeah, it was early goal. I think held on. It was a game of thrust and parry, and it was a game that was quite confrontational and quite competitive, which is what you'd expect. Burnley and Watford continue to be consistently good no matter who they're playing. I think Burnley probably are a bit harder to beat now against the top teams. Watford have suffered some poorer results against the top teams recently. I think Burnley are red hot chances to make Europa this year. But I think the other thing, Carlos, is you've got to be careful what you wish for. Everton were in the same spot this time last year making Europa. I think they won one game and look where they are in the ladder. So Burnley want to fire up and want to be as hard to beat as possible. But maybe they just want to finish seventh rather than sixth so they don't play Europa. Although it would be a great fillip for their manager and for the club for how far they've actually come in recent years.
In true Arsenal form, they went away to Southampton and again proved that they can't really give us a form line to suggest they're going to be any better than the other year. They won or draw there at Southampton with Giroud scoring quite late in the game. Charlie Austin scoring for Southampton. Won all there and again dropping points that probably a team that, you know, has designs on winning leagues that would take all 3 points away from a game like that.
Yeah, absolutely, Carlos. Probably lucky to get the results. I think Southampton scored in the third. They scored in the 88th. And really, I don't know whether there's too much to be said about the game. Arsenal just struggle to build momentum. You know, they just struggle to be able to build momentum because you're always worried about them away from home, no matter who they're playing. And that's just the way it is. I think there's more questions to be answered with Arsenal, with Ozil and Sanchez both being notionally able to sign for clubs come the January transfer window. So it's really interesting with them. I think, you know, they've re-signed Arsene Wenger for a couple more years. Is that the best thing that they could possibly do? I think they don't lack an identity. They're well followed. They're well supported. They do play well at their best, but just extremely inconsistent in general terms around their performance, particularly away from home.
3-2 away win by Leicester at Newcastle. Two questions here. Firstly, Leicester in the top half of the table now. Could they actually recapture the form that won them things a couple of years ago? And secondly, is Rafa Benitez at all under pressure there at Newcastle?
I think he would be under pressure. Six games with only one point, Carlos, for Newcastle after a positive start for the year. But it does show you, I don't think you want to read too much into Leicester's performance, only because it only takes three wins to get them in the position that they're in, because there's so many, you know, average teams in and around that middle and bottom part of the ladder. So Leicester are doing well. And interestingly, Carlos, there's two common denominators there, Mahrez and Vardy. Two games ago, it was Vardy and Mahrez. This game, it was Mahrez scoring. So I think Leicester, you know, have changed their manager, and Puyol has got three wins, and he's doing well. I wouldn't read too much into their form. I think the story is about Newcastle. Six games with only a point, losing home and away. He's not under pressure, but look, I think they sit 16th, Carlos, or something like that. And you know what the stats say, that if you're in those positions after Christmas, you know where you're going to end up, don't you? So I think you've got to really be careful if you're Newcastle. I think they'd be silly in genuine terms to really let Benitez go, but it is going to be interesting to see how they go.
Well, Warren, thanks for joining us this morning. Of course, you'll give a full wrap of the EPL weekend's games tonight on the EPL show with yourself and Francis Leach. Of course, you'll be joining the Diegos with some serious, serious football chat later on tonight.
Yes, my shows are all about being serious these days, Carlos, so I'll manage to do that again.
Good on you, mate.
No worries. See you later.
That's Warren Diego there, our FNR EPL expert, giving his wrap of the English Premier League on the weekend. One person who will not be very, very happy with how things went on the weekend with Manchester United, her beloved Manchester United, is Louise Taffer. She'll be joining us after a short break with her W League wrap here on FNR Football Nation Radio, Calcio Cafe.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yes, you're listening to a radio revolution live across Australia, streaming football 24/7. It's FNR Football Nation Radio, Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. And of course, as we do every Monday, we get our W League wrap with our favourite Taffer Time with Louise Taffer. Good morning to you, Louise.
Good morning, Carlos.
Now, I know that you're a little bit sleepy this morning because you're up watching the Manchester Derby, and you'd be a little bit unhappy right now.
Yeah, I am. I don't want to talk about it. Like, I mean, Manchester City, I just want them to lose so other clubs can catch them, Carlos.
Yeah, so especially if it's
even
your club,
man. Your West Ham.
Yeah, it could be my West Ham, but especially if it's your Manchester United. But anyway, let's get into the W League. What a huge weekend of W League football there was. Some terrific results.
Oh, of course. Let's start with the round opener on Saturday at Lakeside Stadium. Melbourne Victory against Adelaide United. They took a 4-0 win, which was a little bit unexpected. But Melbourne Victory's Natasha Dowie scored a double. She's also the captain, and she became the club's all-time leading Westfield W League goal scorer, taking her tally to 16 goals in 25 games for the club. Now, after joining Caitlin Friend on 14 goals, she's now clear as that all-time top goal scorer.
Fantastic. And she has been a star with Melbourne Victory for many years, even when they haven't done so well. But 4-0 win over Adelaide United. And Adelaide United were one of the teams that beat Perth Glory early in the season. What a crazy season this is.
I know. It's becoming really unpredictable. And, Adelaide just couldn't convert. And it was Melbourne Victory who were better on the day.
Of course, the second game on the weekend, Western Sydney Wanderers and Sydney FC. Of course, it was the W League version of the Derby. It was a doubleheader there in Sydney. And Sydney FC, as they did with the men later on, even though it wasn't quite as big a win, but it was a good, solid 3-1 win over Western Sydney Wanderers by Sydney FC.
Yeah, I was just about to say, CFC take 6 points this weekend.
That's right.
Three in the W League Sydney Derby and three in the A League Derby. And before I get into all the results, it was a great attendance by all the fans in Sydney. 8,500 people at the W League match, so fantastic there. But the goals came from Remy Simpson. She opened the scoring in the 21st. She came back and scored again 3 minutes later. And then Marlos Pieta, she's the Western Sydney Wanderers player, she converted a penalty just before the break, and Lisa Devanna came back and scored one in the second half. So that's Sydney FC's third victory and second consecutive win. I spoke to Ante Juric last week before the match, and he said he doesn't want to lose. So they've gifted enough presents to all of the other clubs, and this is them on the rise back up.
That's one good coach who says he doesn't want to lose. It's a good objective to have if you are a coach. Melbourne City, of course, they were up against your girls there at Canberra United. It was a 2-1 win in the end. Jess Fish Lock, unbelievable on night.
Yeah, double to the Welsh international. She was, hard to beat, but it was enough for City to take the 2-1 win. And that's now her fourth goal for the season. And we also heard from Patrick Kisnorbo, Melbourne City's head coach, post-match, and he said she's the best player in the W League, if not the world. She's world-class. Players like herself sometimes get kicked, and that's part of the game. She was fantastic today, as was the whole team. Patrick Kisnorbo there. But Claire Simon, she's created 20 goal-scoring chances this W League season, more than any other player in the competition. So we know how strong she is. But also for Canberra United, Michelle Heyman, who opened the goal-scoring campaign in the match, she bagged her 50th goal for Canberra United. And I spoke to her post-match, and she said she feels a lot quicker, and she's really just focusing on getting more game time now before the upcoming tournaments, international tournaments next year.
Of course, you'll have all the audio from those interviews in FNR News later on in today, and also you'll have it on Football W during the week also. Now, do we worry about Lydia Williams at all? Of course, she's been on two televised games, and she's had two absolute brain explosions. Is it a worry about her at the moment with her confidence with ball at feet?
I'm not sure what it is. I feel like City sometimes seem to just shoot themselves in the feet. I really don't know what it is. Like you saw yesterday, she passed it in the path of Heyman, and it was all too easy for Heyman to intercept and score. I don't know what it is, Carlos. Yeah,
it may well be. I think sometimes what happens, sometimes it's the supporting players who don't give if those people who didn't see this, Lydia Williams a couple of weeks ago slipped over and really gave the ball to an opposition striker who just tapped it in. And just yesterday, it was a pass into the feet of Michelle Heyman when she was trying to actually reach another one of her teammates. And it may have been the angle the teammate didn't give her at the time. So maybe there's a structural issue there. But with the last game, Louise, Brisbane Roar at home were absolutely hammered by Newcastle Jets 3-0.
Yeah, they were. And it was all thanks to the hat-trick hero and three goals by half-time from the American import, Aaron Gilliland, and she was on fire. So, the Jets are back into it. Glory, just before we get into the table, Carlos, Glory had a bye, but when they return this week, they'll be taking an away trip to Newcastle.
Wow.
So that'll be very, very interesting because Craig Deans' team is closely behind them on the table. So the Jets move up to second place after beating Raw. They're now on equal points with Perth Glory, but Glory is still ahead only on goal difference. And the Jets have only been second twice this season. So Raw, on the other hand, have been second three times in round 1, 4 and 6. But Raw are also currently on equal points with Jets and Glory. And that's 12 points. But again, goal difference is what separates them all.
And it's approaching the halfway mark of the season too this weekend. And I think there's a fair few teams still in it if they get a good run, especially after a win like Melbourne Victory had. They're on 7 points at the moment. And if they can get a bit of a run going, they'll push for the top six too. So it's it's a fascinating season of W League, Louise. And thanks for joining us today. Of course, you'll be hosting with George Zanicki in the FNR News later on at 4 p.m. Eastern with all the latest W League news and all the news around the world of football. So can't wait for that.
Yeah, Carlos. And just before I go, even Sydney FC, like now they're on their fifth. So that's the highest they've ever been this season. Mm. And they're just 1 point behind Melbourne City, who are fourth. So it's very, very close. And as I said a little earlier, I think it's a bit unpredictable at the moment as to who's going to finish first by the end of it.
Well, we'll bring it to everyone here on FNR Football Nation Radio. And thanks for your time again this morning, Louise. And I'll see you in the office very soon.
Thanks, Carlos.
Good on you, mate. That's a little bit of Taffer time with Louise Taffer. And that brings an end to Calcio Cafe for this morning. Of course, you could podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud.com. So until this time tomorrow morning, may you have a great day in football.
Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR. Football Nation Radio.